Sustainable Wine Roundtable. What is it in a nutshell? Who are the members, and what were the key objectives? So how did you? What is it in a nutshell?
Well, first of all, I'm glad I've got a slightly different jacket on than I have the same. SWR, we're a global organization. We're based out of London. We've got about 140 members. And I think our back to what Ed was saying just now about wine being a very fragmented industry. We've got everything from sort of big and small growers at one end, so we get everything from Treasury through to Vari, which is a small Barolo producer in Italy. And at the retail end, we've got the Northern Monopolies, the Canadian Monopolies, Coles in Australia, and everyone else in the middle. So standard bodies, bottle makers, packaging makers, regional bodies. So what that means is we can get to see sustainability challenges from lots of different perspectives. So, you know, the bottle weight being case in point, you know, it's not just one part of the industry's challenge. It has to be dealt with collectively. And that's really kind of our super skill. It's being able to bring all of those different elements of the industry together and say, so where should we go? You know, what should we be doing? Because again, the other thing, and you mentioned greenwash, part of the challenge is that there's a lot of factoids in sustainability, things that people believe to be true, which when you start to dig down, actually aren't. I mean, the heavy bottles are believed to have been case in point. So what we try and do is use proper research to say, here is the evidence base that everyone can work to, that then says, right, this is how we can move forward together. So you don't get that sort of someone saying, well, I've got a plastic bottle, that's much more sustainable. Well, yes, you've got the carbon benefit, but unless you do something about the recycling, you've got a different problem. So our role is to provide that evidence-based catalyzed change across the industry, in a nutshell.
Okay, great. Obviously bringing together like all those disparate groups with, you know, competitors and with different objectives themselves, that's a challenge. So what was the genesis? How did it actually begin? And how did you agree on common collective objectives?
Well, that's per usual. That's like most good ideas. It happens in a bar. Richard Bamfield, who's a master of wine, came up with the idea that, well, something needs to be done to catalyze change and sustainability in wine. And we were all sitting around the bar in 67 Pall Mall, and you know, the next morning we seemed to have a couple of sheets of A4 that said this was a good idea. I mean, you raised the point about competitors. A lot of this stuff is pre-competitive. And if you take something like bottle weight as an example, you know, there's not necessarily any necessarily advantage to one part of the industry versus another to get it to happen. Look at something like labour standards. You know, if a vineyard in France or Australia has a trouble with labour rights issues, that's not just that vineyard's problem, it's the whole industry's problem. So actually a lot of this stuff is pre-competitive. Another advantage we have is we end up, I mean, you had it in one of your slides, we're a neutral space. We'll talk in a minute about the bottle weight accord in a bit more detail. Mm-hmm. But one of the issues we had there is that, particularly with retailing, we'll have the same issue here, there's a lot of sensitivity about doing things that look like they're in collaboration. And that works if retailers do it together. But if they work through us, then that problem disappears. So when we put the bottle weight accord together, the Nordic monopolies, for example, had all wanted to do something on bottle weight. But then, despite the fact they're monopolies, they can't act as a cartel. So they couldn't collaborate on a bottle weight process. But we came along saying, here's our research, this is what we recommend. They were able to sign up for it. So it provides a neutral forum where everyone can get round. And again, to pick up on your top, that side, idea about forum for discussion, a lot of our value add is having people throw around ideas about, I'm having trouble here, how do I get round it? And it's that forum to exchange ideas of what worked, what didn't work. Oh, you tried that, let's try this over here. There's a lot of that which is hugely valuable. So we don't find the competitive issue really comes up a lot. You always get lawyers, antitrust lawyers sniffing around, particularly when it comes to things like our bottle weight accord, and we're just about to launch a sparkling bottle weight accord. But because we're a neutral body, we don't have a political position, we don't have a position that's anything other than what does the evidence tell us. That provides a really solid base for the industry to collaborate around.
Okay, yeah. So how did you, bottle weight accord was one of the collective actions that you identified. Were there others, and how did you come together to decide on those action points.
Well, really, as you said in your findings, the wine bottle weight is the no-brainer. You know, we all like to think of this sort of rather, you know, lovely idyllic vineyard with lots of butterflies and, you know, squirrels frolicking, you know, across the ground, and think about how you maximise the, you know, the carbon benefit of that. The reality is much less romantic and much more pragmatic. That anything up to 50% of the carbon footprint of wine is the bottle it comes in. And as you say, that's partly because you have to melt sand to make the stuff, and then when the bottles are made, they're bloody heavy when you transport them. And if you look at the Australian wine industry, 74%, this is Wine Australia figures, 74% of their carbon emissions are the packaging. So doing something about that is a complete and utter no-brainer. You know, this is when we first got started in the whole kind of research piece, so this is, you know, 3 years ago. And what we found, again, coming to this thing about bringing existing stuff together, we found that quite a lot of our members had already done something around bottle weight. They had, you know, Joe in their research department done a bit, you know, Fred on had done something. And so you bring those bits together, but you start to get a fairly good starting point. You then add proper research to that. You can then say, right, this is what we should be doing. We came up with a recommendation, 420 grams. Then we wanted a number that was ambitious enough to be meaningful, because at that stage, all of these figures are slightly challenging because the data isn't great. But the average bottle, when we started 3 years ago, was about 550 grams. We set a target for 420 grams by the end of 2026. And went out at the end of last year, we were 430 grams. And the reason we went for 420 was A, the Canadian monopolies already said that was their target weight. Because again, I think having this a point everyone can agree on is an important thing. What we didn't want was that we said 410 is the Canadian was saying 420, some were saying something different. So everyone can focus on the same thing. We also wanted to be something that people, that wasn't going to scare the horses. Because we could have said we want to go for 380, because already a lot of retailers were using 380 gram bottles. But we knew a lot of people were going to have, there was going to be that sucking of teeth moment in too many spaces. So 420 was a, okay chaps, we know we can do this. It's doable, it's not going to scare people, let's go for that. But it worked.
So going forward then, are you hoping to stay with the 420 as your continued target then? What's the vision with that? We were discussing this earlier, and that question of then,
that's my work cover that September. Yeah, we started off with six signatures, we've now got about 20, who between them make and sell about 3 billion bottles of wine, which is about 10% of all the wine sold in the world, which is, you know, not bad, a decent party, as someone said. And if you then look at that in both carbon figures, that's over the first 2 years of the accord, that's a carbon saving of about 500,000 tons, which is the equivalent of two Hollywoods. Yeah, great fun looking at the sort of relative carbon emissions. But looking at it from a financial perspective, because at the end of the day, we're all running businesses here, and it's all gonna eventually come down to the bottom line. If all of that would have gone through, those weight savings could have gone through on UK EPR numbers, that's 60 million quid straight through to our members' bottom line. You've got EPR coming into the EU as of PPWR comes in on the 12th of August. So you're going to get an EPR, it's a bit chaotic, but that will be coming into Europe as well. So that is a real straight through the bottom line thing. We're about to launch a sparkling wine bottle weight accord, and one of our retailers, I did the numbers, just on their sparkling wine will save £6 million a year. Which again, you know, that's not changing. So it's been very successful, but also I think it's given people the ability to say, right, you can do this. I mean, the point.
Say that again. It's given
people.
You
can do it. You can do something. And one of the points you made earlier is, when we were chatting, is that sustainability is confusing with lots of things, and therefore the temptation is, where do I start? Do this first. Get that to work, and then you can move forward. To come back to your question, where do we go next? Do we go for a lighter weight? Because we know now that most of the big bottle makers have 300 gram bottles. A lot of our retailers already have much of their stuff in 370, 380. Do we go lighter? The argument for doing that is, well, you know, you can keep pitching ahead. The danger, though, is A, twofold. First of all, a lot of our members have specifically had bottles bespoke made to reach the 420 gram limit. So are you slightly kicking them in the proverbials? Secondly, do you want a high performing group that just goes on and on and on and on? Or do you want to say, right, you've got 10% of the world's wine now. Do we target by, say, 2030? Do you want 30% of the world's wine involved? Yeah, because I can't do maths, but I think probably getting 30% coming down by a degree is going to be a hell of a lot more impactful than getting 10% going a little bit further. So I don't know because I haven't done the work yet, but I think that's the way we'll end up going, because if we could target, this is, you know, an area where, you know, there's real potential for us to collaborate. If we could get to 30% of world wine, so, you know, 10 billion bottles by 2030, at 420 or below, that'd be a pretty significant carbon saving. And with EPR coming in Europe, in Australia, in 7 states in the US, there's a straight through bottom line benefit to companies as well.
Okay.
So it keeps your FD happy.
Yeah. For, in terms of what we're doing here today, looking at considering whether it be bottle weight or similar initiative, from your perspective of, you know, having brought the SWR together and the BWA, are there three or four things that you would share that are key to consider, whether it's mistakes that were made or things you did particularly well, are there two or three things that really stand out that you would say, okay, this is something very important to consider?
I think there's the collaborative bit can't be overstated. You know, coming up with something that everyone can agree on. And when we started with the bottle weight accord, we thought it needed to be almost done like parliamentary draftsmanship. You know, something that had all sorts of clauses and we'll do this by this date and that by that date and that by that date. That didn't work because, of course, everyone's internal business systems are different.
Mm.
So if you try and bring in an external, you've got to do it like this, it didn't work. So it was right, here's the target, here's what we're trying to get to. It's up to you to make it work in the way that works well in your business. The second thing was what data you want. I mean, that was one of your points that you brought up, is that we don't audit the data we get given, because to do so put such an onus both on the participants to provide that sort of causal link and for us to be able to actually go out and do it. At the end of the day, if someone wants to lie, someone's going to lie. We trust their members not to. So all we want from our accord is number of bottles sold of different SKUs and weights of each, divide down through to the average. So I think that sort of keep it simple is important. Because it makes it a lot easier to get buy-in, it makes it a lot easier to do. The second bit is the sharing bit. It's about saying, right, okay, I've run into this problem inside my business, can I work with the rest of, you know, others to say, how might I get past that? The third is making sure you involve other bits of the industry. And obviously, in this room, you're predominantly the downstream, the sort of retail, the trader end of the industry. It's important also that you engage the guys who are actually making the wine and bottling the wine. Because if they don't understand what's going on, if they don't understand what the rationale is, it just feels like, oh, man, there's another thing I need to be doing. So it's very important to involve all of those guys. Also, the bottle makers, because a lot of stuff that they could help with around what's available where. Because I mean, another thing where we're going to go, I think, with our next phase of bottle weight is that lightweighting bottles is easier in certain parts of the world because there's the availability of those bottles. In other parts, say South Africa, getting 420 grams with cork closure is quite difficult. So what do you want? Okay, well, they use a slightly heavier bottle, or do we want them to ship 420 gram bottles in from China? Dot, dot, dot. So engaging with the rest of the industry is really important. And it's having that ongoing, just keeping the process moving. And again, I think one of the points you raised earlier is, if you're going to extend this collaboration over time, what do you do? Doing something is the way forward.
Mm.
Doing something where the outcome or the result is tangible,
yeah,
which it is with bottle weight. Something that the variables, yes, they're not easy, but they are relatively limited, and you can learn from each other, also what we've been doing. That, I think, would be some of the lessons I
sort of. Okay, brilliant. Does anyone have any questions for Peter that you'd like to raise at this point? And we'll be opening the discussion up as well. But Matt,
should we be forgetting about bottlers completely and looking for something else? For the cost of producing the bottles, the power that's used, the way the situation in the world is now, should we educate people to use cartons or tetrapacks or whatever and get away from bottles? I know it takes a lot of romance out of wine, but.
Well, you just printed the thing I've been working on for the last 6 months, which is alternative packaging, which is exactly that question. Because we were finding that, I'm going to answer from a slightly different perspective, we were finding a lot of, you got the greenwash thing again. We're using a plastic bottle because that's more sustainable. But okay, yeah, you win the carbon battle, but unless you've got the chain of custody on recycling, you've got a plastics pollution or landfill problem. Your question gets us into the whole area of consumer perception and consumer behaviours, which is always difficult. But what the research I've done over the last 6 months, and also the sparkling wine last year, is that although for many years yet to come, glass is likely to be the predominant packaging format, there is a lot of reason to believe, not just that other packaging formats will become more prevalent, but actually using other packaging formats could be part of wine's way to slightly get out of the doldrums it's in at the moment. And some examples of that. Tins, you know, wine in tins, which, you know, many people might think is, you know, is a bit of, you know, crunchy, couldn't possibly do that. Well, a couple of things. First of all, we know that wine consumption overall is declining. We know that, because all the evidence says that younger people tend to drink less. But the difference between the drop in volume and the drop in value demonstrates that people are buying better quality. So if someone can buy a good quality wine, they have one serving like on a Wednesday, they'll buy it. You go through a station, Tesco call wine in cans train wine, because most of their sales are people going, like if I'm going from Waterloo Station back home, I won't buy a bottle of wine, I don't look too much like a dipster, but I might buy a couple of cans, because they're convenient, they're easy to carry. And also then you're not cannibalizing your existing sales of bottle, because you couldn't have bought the bottle, you buy the cans. Frugal Pack paper bottles. They did a roaring trade with the Coldplay tour last year, because a lot of the Coldplay concerts were in stadia where you couldn't have glass. And obviously Coldplay audience don't drink beer, they like wine, they don't want to have to queue up at the bar every 5 minutes, so were bottles useful. So it's that situation, that occasion specific stuff, I think there's a real opportunity for pushing that.
Yeah, and that very much came through in our report as well, that it was more, there was different occasions and different reasons for buying the alternative packaging, that again, the sustainability aspect of it was a lovely bonus to it, but it was about practicalities of, you know, how that this packaging actually might suit better than bottle. So, and also there was a lot of, there was quite a bit of concern from trade around the, okay, I might buy into this, but then, you know, if my consumers don't buy into it, I'm left with a load of stuff that doesn't have the same shelf life. So there was, you know, it seems to be something that is also has the potential to grow, but at its own pace. And as you say, in parallel to, as opposed to
but I think it's like, you know, there's a real opportunity to play with this. You know, again, you think about, you know, afternoon like now, you've got a garden party. Do you want a couple of, you know, bottles of white that fall over in the ice bucket? Or actually just a brick of tinnies that goes in the ice? There's all sorts of things that if you get people to think about it. And again, it's all about consumer communication. And also I think there is the bit about if you overplay the sustainability, then the evidence demonstrates that there's a sense that people think, well, the wine's shitter because it's sustainable, therefore it's not as good quality wine. So sometimes you've overplayed the sustainability and you end up as a negative. We also know that consumers aren't really going to pay more for sustainability. They don't go out of their way to buy sustainable. So if you make it easy, you know, the work we've done on consumer perception globally is that, you know, again, massive variations, but, you know, most developed markets, about a third of the audience think sustainability is a nasty left-wing plot designed to overthrow Western civilization. orange people. then the, of the other two-thirds, about, depending on the country, between about 10 and 18% will proactively see sustainability as a thing that they will buy into. Hence, you know, the success of brands like Patagonia. Of the kind of rest of the 50%, they generally think that sustainability is a jolly nice thing, but they're not going to make any effort to do anything about it and they won't pay more. But if you say, right, you know, that bottle is lighter than that bottle therefore is more sustainable, you can buy that bottle, it's not going to cost you any more, you just need to lift it off the shelf and you can feel good about yourself, then they'll do it. And again, I think therefore it's, to link this back to your question, it's about how, and again, this is why I think what you're talking about with consistent communication to consumers, I think that allows you to sort of help consumers to take decisions which are sustainable but fit their lifestyles better. They get to do something which makes them feel good about themselves, doesn't cost them any more, it's not any more difficult to do, but when we get the outcome we want.
Okay, yes.
Sorry, did you have any challenge between the weight of the bottle and the size of the bottle? Because bringing the weight down is one thing, bringing the size of the bottle has been a challenge. We had a very interesting case where we were selling Chianti Classico, and when they bought the weight of the bottle down, they also bought the size of the bottle down. And we had three customers in the entree sent them back. I said, well, hang on, we're going down the route of lighter bottle, and this is what happened. So it was just something that I didn't really think too much about. Have you had any of that issue with the people where you worked on?
Yeah, I mean, you're right, because one of our members is Wirra Wirra, which is an Australian wine brand. And they've got quite a distinctive bottle. It's straight sides, it's got crenellation sort of around top and bottom. And they invest in having a lighter weight version of that done. And yes, it sits about that much lower than the previous one. Yeah. And their answer to making the difference, you just don't stick them on the shelf next to each other. You know, fairly straightforward. But I think the other thing is that given that so much wine now is bought online, that problem doesn't really manifest. And I think what I would say is that we've had 3 billion bottles in our recall, and so far we've had no adverse consumer feedback. Because I think most people, you know, I think if you look along a wine shelf, there's difference in heights anyway. So you're right about the fact of the thing, but we've not seen it being a major challenge.
Exactly, but I read that the Ukrainian bottle factory that was shut down as a result of the invasion has been a major problem in terms of getting bottle production costs down because they were huge. Is that true, or is it?
I can't particularly talk about that example, but
you know, I just wondered. I heard that was one of the reasons why costs have gone up in general because they were a bottle producer and they're no longer there because they're making drugs.
The answer is that I don't know that specific example, but I mean it is true that. The availability of bottles of different weight varies massively.